Imagine it's like 4.45 p.m. on a Friday.
Oh, the absolute worst time to do anything.
Right. The classic danger zone. So you're looking at your Kubernetes dashboard, and it is just a sea of green, you know, ready lights.
Everything looks perfect.
Exactly. You've just merged a pull request, updating a core microservice, the system is syncing, and you are literally getting ready to close your laptop for the weekend. But what if those green lights are actually lying to you?
Which happens way more often than people want to admit.
I mean, what if the old version of your app is perfectly healthy, but the new code you just shipped is currently silently melting down in the background, and your pipeline has absolutely no idea?
That is the nightmare scenario right there.
It really is. So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is to explore a new pre-alpha project called Hecate. And for anyone brushing up on their Greek mythology, Hecate is the goddess of keys, gates, thresholds.
And crossroads, yeah.
Right, crossroads. And that name is incredibly fitting because we're looking at how this project solves this massive, frustrating bottleneck in modern software deployment. Specifically, you know, the moment you need a key to cross a boundary.
Yeah, the project's documentation actually refers to her explicitly as the key holder. You know, she stands at the boundary and she decides what passes.
That's just such a cool visual.
It is. And that boundary is exactly where modern deployments are just hitting a brick wall today. I mean, we live in a world where FlexCD is incredibly popular among platform engineers, and for very good reason, right?
Oh, yeah. People love Flex.
Right. Because it's this brilliant synchronization engine. It makes a Kubernetes cluster match exactly what is written in a Git repository. But, and this is the huge caveat, Flux has absolutely zero opinion on what should be put into that Git repository next.
So if you're just running like a single development environment, that's fine, right? You push code, Flux reads the blueprint, the cluster updates, boom.
Exactly. But the moment you scale, say you're trying to move that code from development up to staging and then finally into, you know, a lockdown production environment, you hit this wall.
Because Flux reads the blueprint, but it doesn't write it.
Yes. How does the container image that just passed all its automated tests in dev actually get promoted to staging? If you look at the wider Flux ecosystem today, they have UIs, they have extensions, integrations, but there is this massive glaring omission when it comes to a native promotion category.
Right. There's just no built-in way to move code between environments. So since Flex doesn't move the code on its own, how are engineers actually promoting code right now? Like, what are the workarounds?
Well, people try a few things. You might think, oh, I'll just reach for Flagger, which is an excellent tool, but it's fundamentally built for progressive delivery within a single environment.
Like a canary deployment.
Exactly. Shifting traffic between two versions of your app in one cluster, it does not physically move a new artifact from, say, your dev environment into your staging environment.
Gotcha. What about the Flux operator resource set?
You could try that, yeah. That gives you templated ephemeral environments with strong discovery features, but, and this is key, it has no promotion model whatsoever. There's no immutable release unit, no thresholds, no approvals, no history.
So teams are basically just duct taping this together themselves.
Pretty much.
And from what I've seen, it seems like the most common way, which is shockingly even recommended in some official docs, is just writing a custom GitHub action.
Oh, yeah, the massive YAML file approach.
Right. Some platform engineer spends their entire Tuesday writing this huge YAML workflow just to push changes from one folder to another. It's kind of like using a medieval trebuchet to deliver a fragile package.
A trebuchet. That's actually a great way to picture it.
You know, you load up your code, you launch it over the castle wall into the production namespace, and you just hope it lands in the right courtyard. You have zero tracking info, no delivery receipt, and honestly, you have no idea if it arrives safely or just smashed into a tower.
I love that analogy because those workflow files suffer from really critical architectural flaws. First of all, they have absolutely no memory.
What do you mean by no memory?
A generic GitHub action doesn't inherently know what version of your software is currently sitting in staging versus production. It just runs the script. And second, it relies entirely on a push and hope mechanism.
Push and hope.
Yeah. You push the change to Git, and the workflow usually just finishes and reports success without waiting for Flux to actually converge, reconcile, and report back on the actual health of the cluster.
Okay, wait. Let me push back on the approval side of this, though. I understand the deployment mechanism itself might be flying blind, but isn't checking who has the rights to click merge on a pull request like a perfectly fine approval model?
Yeah.
I mean, if I lock down the production branch so only a senior platform engineer can hit merge, shouldn't we trust that approval?
That raises the fundamental question, right? What are we actually verifying when someone hits merge? Relying on who can merge is an approval model based purely on vibes, literally just vibes, not actual state or evidence. You are blindly trusting that the human actually checked the test results, verified the security scans, and confirmed the deployment window.
And humans get tired. We make mistakes.
Exactly. A workflow file doesn't check if the artifact is mathematically safe. It just checks if someone with the right IAM role clicked a green button. We need a system that checks the structural reality of the code. Plus, when a deployment inevitably gets stuck, that trebuchet workflow cannot answer the simple diagnostic question of why it's stalled. It leaves no curable history.
Okay, yeah. The trebuchet method is clearly broken. It's blind and it relies on vibes.
Yeah.
So if workflow files aren't the answer, how does Heykade actually structure the movement of code? Because looking at it, the API surface is incredibly lean.
It is very lean. Just four core resources.
Right. The beacon, the bundle, the gate, and the passage. So rather than just listing definitions, let's walk through an actual scenario for you listening. Let's say a developer pushes a commit to their laptop. What actually happens?
Okay, let's trace the journey. The developer pushes code, and your continuous integration system builds a new container image and pushes it to a registry. This is where that first resource comes in, the beacon.
Okay, so what does the beacon do?
Its entire job is just to observe. It watches your container registries, your Helm charts, your Git repositories, and the moment that new container image appears, the beacon sees it and emits a bundle.
Now, I want to clarify the bundle because my understanding is it's not just a generic label like version 2, right?
Not at all. A bundle is an immutable content-addressed set of artifact versions. It explicitly declares, I am this specific Git commit hash plus this exact container image digest.
Okay, so because it's content addressed, it's mathematically locked.
Exactly. It cannot be changed or tampered with once it's created. That bundle is the secure package that now needs to move.
And it moves toward the third resource, the gate.
Right. A gate represents the environment itself, so let's call it staging. The gate defines the exact threshold the bundle has to cross to be allowed inside.
And the attempt to cross is the passage.
You got it. When the system attempts to push that bundle through the staging gate, that physical attempt is the passage. It says one single, highly monitored attempt to move one bundle through one gate. And it is fully auditable. You can pause it, resume it, or just abort it if something looks wrong.
You know, there is something missing in this architecture, which I actually think is a brilliant choice. There is no pipeline object.
Oh, yes. That is very intentional.
The developers chose not to build a pipeline resource to string these gates together. Why is that?
Because building a dedicated pipeline resource usually traps platform teams. In Heykade, the pipeline is simply implied by what each gate admits.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if your production gate explicitly says, hey, I only accept bundles that have already successfully cleared the staging gate, you've naturally created a pipeline organically.
Right, without having to maintain a separate map of it.
Exactly. If Heykade had a separate pipeline resource, it would just become this second source of truth that would inevitably drift out of sync with the actual gates. By defining the rules of entry, the path just creates itself.
It's incredibly elegant.
Hmm.
And speaking of elegant, let's talk about the dead drop mechanism. Because Heykade never actually talks directly to Flux, does it?
Never. It writes to Git. Flux naturally syncs that change to the cluster, and then Heykade simply reads the status back from the cluster to see if it worked.
Git is the rendezvous point.
Git is the rendezvous.
So Git is essentially a dead drop in a spy movie. I love this. Heykade securely drops the intelligence in the Git repo. Flux picks it up completely independently without ever seeing Heykade, and then Heykade just watches from a distance.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
Which means if a platform team decides to uninstall Heykade tomorrow, all their existing manifests and deployments still work perfectly.
Exactly. It keeps Flux authoritative and keeps Heykade completely removable. You aren't locking yourself into some proprietary engine that takes over your whole cluster. It's just a really observant orchestrator.
But wait, if Heykade is just dropping files at the dead drop and walking away, how on earth does it know if the deployment actually worked? Isn't it just flying blind?
Not at all. And this brings us back to that Friday afternoon scenario you mentioned at the start, the false green lights.
Ah, yes. The lying dashboard.
Right, because naive Flux health checks are frequently misleading. Kubernetes might report a resource with a status of ready equals true, but Kubernetes tracks state in a very specific way.
How so?
If the observed generation of that resource is lagging behind the metadata.generation, it means the controller hasn't actually processed the new changes yet. So that ready signal, it's describing the previous version of your software.
Oh, wow. That is genuinely terrifying for an operator. You see green lights across the board, but it's just the ghost of the old system humming along while your new deployment is literally on fire in the background.
Exactly. So Hakkadi's honest health checks are engineered specifically to catch this. They read the true state of the cluster, not just the surface level flags.
That makes so much sense.
And they handle the opposite problem, too. In Flux, a ready equals false is not necessarily a terminal failure, because Flux is designed to just retry most failures indefinitely.
Right, it just keeps trying.
Yeah. So a simple ready equals false never actually becomes a final failure state. But Hakkadi is smart enough to record that the passage is progressing until Flux officially declares it's stalled, or until a specific deadline you've configured runs out. And if a resource is marked suspended, Hakkadi knows it will never reconcile, so it won't just hang a passage forever waiting on a human.
So it is rigorously observing the true reality of the cluster.
Very rigorously.
But observing the cluster is only half the battle, right?
Yeah.
We also need to know if the code is actually allowed to be there in the first place. We need to replace the vibes of a manual PR approval with actual evidence.
Yes.
And this brings us to Hakkadi's integration with a project called FIDES.
This integration is arguably the most critical shift in the entire promotion model. Hakkadi maps its structural movement directly to cryptographic evidence using FIDES.
Cryptographic evidence, that sounds intense.
It is, but in a good way. Because a crossing in Hakkadi is fundamentally a change gate, it lines up perfectly with enterprise compliance frameworks. The bundle that is moving maps exactly to a feeds trail, the gate it's trying to pass through maps to a feeds environment, and the verification outcome, you know, the actual proof that the artifact passed its test maps to a feeds attestation.
Let's pause here and really dig into this, because this is massive for compliance and security. Instead of asking, hey, did Alice approve this pull request? Hakkadi looks at the feeds data and asks, do I have a cryptographic attestation that this exact image digest passed the security scan?
Exactly.
Like, does it mathematically align with our artifact policy? Mm-hmm. Does it meet the segregation of duties requirement?
Yes. The question of whether something can ship to production is finally answered by mathematically verifiable evidence, not human assumptions. Every single passage leaves a tamper-evident record.
Wow.
So for any organization dealing with rigorous standard security controls, and we're talking about SOC2, ISO 27001, NIST, PCI DSS, DORA, SOX, this system maps directly onto those controls.
So when the auditor shows up...
Right. When the auditor asks to see your deployment history, you aren't handing them some fragile spreadsheet of PR merges and just hoping they don't look too closely. You are handing them an immutable cryptographic chain of custody.
I can hear platform engineers groaning right now, though, thinking, great, another tool means I have to set up another massive database just to read the logs and piece together these cryptographic records. Like, how heavy is this integration? How do we actually monitor this journey from a laptop all the way to production?
That's the best part. Observability was treated as a first-class citizen from day one. They didn't just bolt on logging as an afterthought. Hakkadi uses OpenTelemetry natively.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Every single passage is treated as a distributed trace, and every step within that passage is a span.
Wait, remember that spy dead drop we talked about earlier? My understanding is that Hakkadi injects the OpenTelemetry trace context right into the git commit trailers.
It does.
That is like slipping a microscopic GPS tracker into the briefcase before leaving it at the drop site. Hakkadi can track the exact lifecycle of that code all the way through the system.
That microscopic GPS tracker ensures that a single unbroken trace can span the initial continuous integration run, the Hakkadi crossing itself, the subsequent Flux reconciliation in the cluster, and even the very first live user request that hits the new version of the application.
That is wild.
It creates this continuous, undeniable thread.
Having a single thread connecting the moment the code was tested to the moment a user interacts with it in production is incredible. But does this mean teams don't have to buy or build a completely separate tool just to calculate their DORA metrics?
Exactly. DORA metrics, you know, lead time for changes, deployment frequency, change failure rate, mean time to recovery, these naturally just fall out of the system.
Just as a byproduct.
Yes. You don't need a massive bolted-on subsystem to calculate how fast you're deploying. The trace data generated as a natural byproduct of moving the code contains everything you need to calculate deployment performance.
That is a massive efficiency gain for any team's budget. Now, it's worth noting, the developers build Hakkadi from scratch on purpose. They have their own API, their own vocabulary engine step library. They actually prototyped an alternative where they just adapted an existing promotion engine, and it worked. but they chose not to ship it. Why?
Because using someone else's engine means you are bound by their roadmap and their architectural assumptions. By owning the model, Hecate can ensure these evidence gates and OpenTelemetry capabilities are truly foundational.
Right, they aren't just tacked on.
Exactly. However, they aren't reinventing the wheel everywhere. They smartly reuse ecosystem tools where problems are already solved. Like, they use the Flux operator for artifact discovery, Flagger for verifying progressive delivery, and Feeds for that cryptographic evidence. So they built the core model from scratch, but they leverage best-in-class tools for the edges.
I love a pragmatic engineering approach, but we do need to address the elephant in the room here.
The pre-alpha status.
Yeah. This architecture sounds incredibly robust, but Hecate is still in pre-alpha. I think it has something like 33 passing tests right now. What actually needs to happen for this to become a stable tool that a cautious enterprise team can install and trust?
Fair question. The roadmap is highly strategic. It moves from milestone zero, which is just where they are now, the foundations, the API, the step engine, all the way to milestone 9, which will be the V1.0 release, focusing on custom resource definition stability, upgrade paths, and final security reviews.
Okay, what happens in between?
Well, milestone 1 introduces the control plane. Milestone 4 is the heavy lifting for evidence, mapping those approvals to segregation of duties. Milestone 5 is when all that open telemetry capability fully lands.
A major callout that caught my eye is milestone 6. They're building the command line interface, the CLI, at M6. But the flashy user interface dashboard doesn't get built until milestone 8. Building the CLI before the UI on purpose is such a bold engineer first choice. Like, everyone always wants the dashboard to show executives immediately to get budget buy-in, but they're forcing themselves to prove the underlying API is actually usable first.
Because a UI built before the model actually settles is just generating technical debt. The CLI proves the API surface is coherent. If a platform engineer cannot easily operate it from a terminal, the underlying data model is probably flawed.
Makes total sense. And there's this interesting detour at milestone 6.5. They're introducing an MCP server so AI agents can drive Hecate, plus an optional local large language model for diagnosis.
Yes, but with a massive crucial caveat.
Which is?
The LLM is only there to inspect and request. It can help an engineer diagnose why a passage is stuck by reading those honest health checks, but the LLM never decides what actually crosses a gate.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. Evidence does that. They are keeping the AI strictly out of the approval loop, which is exactly what you want when dealing with rigorous enterprise compliance.
So to bring it all together for you listening, Hecate is stepping in to be the ultimate key holder for Kubernetes environments. It's looking to replace those fragile, medieval, trebuchet workflow files with a rigid, auditable system.
Definitely.
It relies on immutable bundles, it uses Git as a secure dead drop so it never has to fight with Flux, and it replaces vibes-based manual approvals with mathematical cryptographic evidence.
Exactly. And whether you are an operator who is just completely burned out on babysitting manual approvals, or an engineering leader trying to pass a SOC2 audit without losing your mind, moving from vibes to evidence is the unavoidable future of software promotion. The current workarounds simply cannot scale securely.
Which leaves me with one really provocative thought for you to chew on. If Hecate successfully automates all of this compliance, I mean, if it can prove through immutable cryptographic evidence and tamper-evident open telemetry traces that an artifact is completely safe and policy compliant, could this technology eventually make the traditional human-led change advisory board completely obsolete?
Oh, the CAB.
Right. If the evidence is mathematically proven, what is the point of sitting in a two-hour CAB meeting just to have a manager look at a dashboard and say, approved? Maybe we're finally moving past the era of launching software over the wall and hoping for the best. Something to think about next time you hit merge and cross your fingers.